Well, I suppose the first thing is, what an amazing film.
Yeah, it's turned out good, isn't it? Yeah, but it's just being able to get those sort of pictures. Yeah. It's just so impressive if you can just get up there, and John can get up there.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that, really, for the value of the pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the last 20 minutes is just insane when you're trying to get over that call and you're scratching. I mean, what was that like? I mean, we can see what you feel like, or what we think you look like, but I mean, how high was that call?
It's about 6'5", according to John.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have sat-nav. John doesn't like techno things, so we can't have we can't follow it sort of thing.
He doesn't take a GPS?
No, he doesn't take anything.
Well, no. He must have it. He's got a little Vario, though, because we can hear that.
Just the Vario, yeah. It tells you if you're going up and tells you if you're going down, yeah.
So he never flies with GPS or anything?
No, he doesn't like them. He doesn't bother. He's just got a map on his lap, and he's got fairly good local knowledge, you know?
Yeah. That's
what he's used to, so, you know, he feels safer than that, I think, than relying on some little electronic thing, you know?
Yeah, of course, yeah. But, I mean, does he have a backup Vario, or he just has the one Vario that's beeping all the time?
Just the one, I think.
Yeah.
But I was carrying a satellite phone.
Oh, okay.
And we had made arrangements with some guys in, some influential people in Islamabad.
Yeah.
We would phone them, and they would make sure that the pilot got into the chopper.
Right.
Because if you got a sat phone and phoned the chopper company, as it were, they might just not bother.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody pushing them to do it, then that's your best sort of, safety sort of option.
So as I understand it, you lodge a bond, do you, like the climbers do?
That's right, yeah, a few £1,000, I think it was.
Yeah.
With Ascari Aviation.
Yeah. And so how long were you out there this year, or was it last year? Last year.
Last year, last spring.
Right, and how long did you go for?
The whole trip was just over a month for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of...
May or something?
Yeah, all of May. It's debatable when the best weather is, but anywhere between April and July, I think, is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just varies from year to year.
And that was the first time you'd been out in Pakistan?
The first time to the Karakoram, in Pakistan. Yeah. I've always wanted to go out there, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, first time. It's most spectacular. Really, really charming, lovely place with amazing scenery.
Yeah. And over the month that you were there, how much flying did you actually do? Because we saw you had some bad weather, and I think we saw on the movie, we see, three flights?
We did one evening flight that's not there, so we had particularly bad weather.
Right, so you had bad weather for the whole thing.
Yeah, we did. Whereas you can, be lucky and get really good weather, but that year was particularly bad, and that's why I didn't acclimatise.
Okay.
Two short flights. I think I've read somewhere that John sort of wrote down something like, you go up to 20,000 feet in the same time as it takes you to drive to your supermarket at home, as it were.
Yeah.
And that's as quick as it is, to get up. But we didn't have that sort of, up and down a lot, go high. We thought that we'd get high a lot, and we wanted to get high on Rakaposhi, really high.
Yeah.
We just didn't get the weather for it.
So you were going over that pass at 6,500 metres, and you weren't acclimatised at all. I mean, what about John? He must have had some sort of...
Well, I just don't get it with John, because, down here, he's asthmatic, he's got one of these breathing things. But then up there, he was okay.
He had the same amount of acclimatization as you.
Well, I don't know. I'm slightly older than him, so I don't know whether age has sort of made me worse now or what. Mm. But it was the motion sickness more than anything that got me. It's like being seasick. But the altitude thrown in as well just made it a lot worse.
Awful.
Unless John could cope with it somehow. Maybe mentally he's sort of more at ease as well, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems to be completely at home in the air.
That's the thing. Yeah, he is. He's, from the previous flights, I know that I've got my limits. I know when I start feeling a bit drift.
Yeah.
And I feel like, let's go home type of thing.
Yeah.
Like a normal person. But John can just go further and remain in control when things get really nasty.
Yeah.
He is a different animal, yeah.
I mean, he almost seems to revel in that, in the severity of the situation. You know, the more insane the situation becomes, especially when you go into the back of that big cirque and you have to get over that col. I mean, there's no other way out, is there? If you come down there, then you're just in complete boonies, aren't you? But he seems to he really enjoys that.
Yeah, he enjoys the challenge. It's dead simple. He just revels in it. He just really enjoys being out there. And he works it out. And he sort of, when things get a bit tight, he's still logical and he's still cool about it. And he can still make decisions. And if he thinks it can work, he'll make it work. You know, if he believes in it and the conditions look right, he'll just make it. He'll just give it 100% and make it work.
Mm.
He's just looking forwards. He doesn't look back. He knows that, you know, well, maybe I can glide out a fair amount out of here before having to land.
Yeah.
But he does commit himself with that sort of experience that he's got.
Mm.
And he's sort of... He's done well out of it. He's really done some good trips now.
Yeah. So go back to your history, and can you give me like a 60-second rundown, the sort of potted history of your filmmaking career to date?
Okay. Well, when I eventually left instructing, working in outdoor centres.
Okay.
The last place I was at was Placid Brennan, and when I left, there were some guys there doing some very extreme kayaking at the time. It was just when plastic kayaks were coming out. So I followed one of them with a camera, and I borrowed this camera, and I thought it was exciting. I thought it'd be really good for people to realise what was going on, because nobody knew what stuff was going on down in these gorges. It was the Conway River Gorge near Betis Accord, where, you know, this guy was working on the first descent of it.
Hmm.
Just working it in sections. And that's when I started sort of handling a camera. And then I did an ice climbing video, much on the same theme, just to sort of, I thought it'd be good if people realised what was going on these ice falls around here.
Mm.
And I followed Nick Poynton for the fellow winter, and he was doing the hardest things around at the time.
In North Wales ice?
Yeah, very impressive. And then Jimmy Jewell said, hey, listen, will you make a video? If I climb and you take the pictures, then we can maybe do something. And that's what we did with Total Control, it was called.
Yeah.
And it was Jim soloing these desperate sort of E1s and E2s in North Wales again.
Yeah, no, I've seen that.
And then that got the attention of Channel 4 eventually, and I got a 10-minute commission from Channel 4 to do a film. And I asked Johnny Dawes if he wanted to make a film.
Mm.
And we got this chance, and I made a half-hour film out of it and took it to Channel 4 and said, well, look, instead of 10 minutes, we've got half an hour. Do you want it? And said, yeah, great.
We and that was Stone Monkey.
To edit it, and that became Stone Monkey, and that was my first big break.
Yeah.
And then by then, I sort of obviously realised I had this sort of latent talent for sort of doing those sort of things. And it just went on, because the 80s was a good time for following the top people. It was like, you know, well, one of the DVDs I got, I called it The Birth of Extreme.
Yeah.
This was before Extreme was a brand, you know. It was just sort of, it wasn't used then, really. But there were people like Jerry Moffat and Ben Moon, you know, the best climbers in the world. And they were here a lot in North Wales doing stuff.
Yeah.
I did a program with them climbing in France and other places, and then I started breaking into the sort of mainstream television world through the S4C, the Welsh Channel 4, and for the past 20 years I've been doing broadcast stuff, and I actually moved away from doing outdoor stuff and moved into mainstream television and doing adventure travel mostly, and also nature programs, using adventure to get a bit closer to nature. With I did lots of programs with Yola Williams, the Welsh presenter, doing all sorts of things, and did a lot of globetrotting and filming, and I was, you know, really enjoyed it. And then just recently, I thought it'd be good to do some climbing and outdoor things again, and I've ended up doing, a climbing one with a local guy, which went down very well. It's called Dringoi Reitha. And then every now and again, I think it's quite healthy when you're doing a steady job like this television sort of stuff, to do something that you really want to do yourself.
Yeah.
That, or, you know, that excites you and makes you sort of, I don't know, a bit more excited about it all again. And that's why I decided to go out with John again, just to do something totally because we wanted to do it. We didn't have a budget at all, and we just wanted to have an adventure, and I was going to film it sort of thing and just see what happened. And the result is the Birdman of the Karakoram in this case.
And so did you go looking for him, or did he come looking for you?
Well, I was aware. You know, we live pretty close. We're friends. So I was very aware of what he was doing out in Hunza. I'd never been there. And I just thought one day, well, it'd be great to do something. So I think on this one I asked him. I can't remember.
Yeah.
We probably talked about it, and all of a sudden the idea just came up, you know?
Yeah. Cool. And so a couple of questions from Facebook, people posted. One guy, Wickus Willems, he says, the flying in Nowhere and Birdman looks extreme and totally committing. Were there any points where you felt that you were pushing things too far? Did you ever feel like telling John to stop or to turn back?
I was worried. Before going out on Nowhere, I was worried that I would be doing that, and I'd be screaming so much that John would have a hard decision whether to turn back or to ignore me and force me to go on, as it were.
This is in the first film. Sorry. That was on the first film.
On the first film, yeah, from Nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, I was... But my main worry from Nowhere was that I would actually chicken out, if you like, and say, no, I'm not going on, or no, or scream at him and spoil the trip that way.
Yeah.
So I was worried that I might do that, but it didn't happen. There were times when I wanted to turn back, but I kept those feelings to myself, and I just put my faith totally in John, really.
Yeah.
And the same with Birdman. It's hard to say if he was scared or not. He was sort of slightly... I didn't feel out of control. But half the time I was closing my eyes anyway, trying to recover from the sickness.
Yeah.
I wasn't fully with it, so I was totally in John's hands.
Mm.
But we never got out of control, and I think John was well in control. But then again, when you're flying so fast, so close to a mountain face,
yeah,
it's just so easy to snag the end of the paraglider on the mountain itself, you know, and that would be disaster.
Yeah. I mean, this was the one of the other questions, and what really comes through in the movie is that you are really close. I mean, the faces that you're on are enormous, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It would have been fantastic to have a camera far away just to show that.
Yeah.
But obviously, you can't have it. That's the reality of what we were doing. When there's a shot of us going into the cliff. And there was one point, John was saying, that we were going under these overhangs, and we were underneath overhangs, this huge cliff going over our heads, sort of thing, above us.
Yeah.
And then, but from far away, that overhang is just nothing. It just doesn't feature, sort of thing.
And you're underneath
it. You can't point it out without stopping. You know, you'd have to stop the video, and I'd have to point with something to point out where we eventually ended up, sort of thing. You know, as we're going in, you can see all this. But the scale of it is just very, very hard to grasp.
Yeah. And, I mean, Bob Johnson asked on Facebook, he says, when you get in so close, how do you actually know how close you are? Because, I mean, do you lose perspective? Or can you always just tell, oh, we're a wingtip away, or we're half a wingtip away? Are you watching your shadow, or you're just watching the wall all the time?
Oh, you've got this sort of awareness, like a judgment, like you're driving, I would think. You know, I'm not the pilot sort of thing, so that's... I'm a scared passenger, but I would think John is sort of very aware where the wingtip is. And that wingtip is a couple of metres away from the snow sometimes.
It's a couple of metres, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if it's smooth air and you can calculate where you're going to be, you know, a few metres ahead, but if there's any amount of turbulence, obviously you've got to allow a little bit more room.
Mm.
But in Nepal, John hadn't flown, when we did From Nowhere, John hadn't flown a dual for a long time.
Yeah.
We were scratching, we were almost losing it on the first day, and we were scratching this hillside, and there was like a buttress with trees on it, and we had to go really close. And the bloody, the end of the wingtip touched a tree, snagged the tree, and all of a sudden there's this, and he just, you know, he didn't make his catapult into the face, it just released immediately, you know.
Yeah.
So after that, that's why I'm nervous about this sort of John's judgment with a wider. He's not that used to doing dual, you know. He's not as, you know, like some people do duels all the time, and they're used to that clumsy big thing about them. Yeah. Plus, John's more used to the faster, sippier paraglider.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting. And what about? I mean, apart from flying tandem with John. Have you flown solo yourself? Did you ever learn to fly?
Yeah, I did some flying when paragliding first started, and climbers used to sort of just get these things from wherever and clip themselves in with a climbing harness sort of thing in the very early days. I did some then, and then sort of left it, because I'm a climber, basically. And then I did some more. In the 80s, I did some flying, and I got to a sort of what you'd call an intermediate sort of standard. I went to Turkey once and did a cross-country on a holiday in Turkey, and I've done a few small cross-countries round here, you know, from Aileo up to Cloggy and back sort of thing.
Yeah.
But very much a beginner stroke intermediate sort of flyer. And I never really got into it. I liked it. I liked flying, but I never really threw myself into it, because I was much more, I don't know, it's much more interesting filming it somehow. I am fascinated with flying. But I haven't got to any real standard myself on a paraglider.
So talking about the filming of it, I mean, what are the difficulties of making a film like you've just made? Actually filming paragliding, because it's almost an impossible thing to film. We always find it impossible to photograph. It can look very static and very boring, but somehow you manage to capture the excitement of it all and the drama.
Well, keep it simple. You can't compete against big budgets and cameras all over the place and fancy stuff, if you like. But if you've got a good, strong character and a good, strong story, and it's obviously the real deal. You're out there, there's no shots from other places, and there's just a narrative between me and John to keep the thing going. It just seems to work. He's Joe Cool, I'm scared stiff, so I think people enjoy laughing at me, especially seeing my face react to different things. Yeah. And there's like a comedy value there, and it's sort of, you know, you just laugh at it, and then you realise where you are, and it's sort of that thing works somehow. Whereas if you did have all sorts of cutaways and you did have cameras on different places from a long distance, it'd be a different sort of film.
This is
real raw adventure, and I think people appreciate that. It's no hype, it's just what happens. Well, this is, you know, one of the best guys in the world at doing this sort of thing. It's just, how does he do it? The only way to find out is to go with him, and that's what happened. And luckily, people find it entertaining, you know?
Yeah. And that flight that you did that we see at the end, how long did that whole flight take?
Not a long time. I don't know, 4 or 5 hours?
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's a long time flying, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but out there, people are doing 7, 8, 9 hour flights, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And how cold was it?
Cold.
Yeah.
Well, it was very cold. I was surprised looking at the pictures afterwards how cold John got. He got very cold, but he didn't wear that much, really.
Yeah.
But he was really shivering. And, you know, the water bottle was just, well, I can't remember, it was frozen, but it was very, very cold when we landed. But I'm sort of free. I'm in the front. I can move my legs. I can move my arms.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky, really. And you know, if my nose or something gets cold, I can do something about it. But John's got his arms up like that all the time.
Mm.
He has to hold that sort of tension all the time. And when he was going up, when we were beating up that face, he had to make that work. And I think he forgot about his sort of his body, if you like, and just got totally into it. Yeah. And then when we got over the inside, he realised just how cold he actually got.
Yeah.
And that I don't know if he was surprised, but he had, you know, hot aches afterwards, and he said his feet was pretty frozen. Maybe that's why we went down, because we could have flown back to Hunza to the takeoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Had we got right up over that screen, got really high again, we could have gone all the way around Shishpa Peak. Well, that's what John reckoned. But we went straight over the valley, and then we were trying to cross the valley to get onto the sunny side on the other side, yeah. And that's when we lost it, because there was a wind blowing the thermals out, and we couldn't sort of get it from there. But had we thought early enough, maybe we could have. But John's so cold, I think he wanted to, you know, sort of carry on at a lower level.
Yeah. And would you go back?
Yeah, we're thinking of going back next year.
Are we? To do more filming?
Yeah. We'd like to get very high on the Rakaposhi.
How high is very high?
Well, nobody's been to 8,000 metres yet.
No. So over 8,000 metres.
It could be possible, yeah.
And would you take, I mean, you'd have to take oxygen for that, wouldn't you?
Well, climbers don't do that.
No.
No, and, you know, like John says, you know, if climbers can climb and walk at that altitude, surely you can sit down and pull a few strings at that altitude.
Yeah.
That's his sort of logic. Mm-hmm.
So that will be the narrative for the next film, getting to 8,000 metres above Rakaposhi, maybe?
Yeah, if you can get... Rakaposhi is 7788.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the height of Cloggy, really, under 8,000 metres.
Yeah.
But if you can get your shadow over the top of Rakaposhi... and you've got a GPS to prove where you've been.
Yeah.
You could just tick it, because people have been to the high sevens already.
Yeah.
I mean, Eddie Colfox was in from nowhere. I think he got over seven on his first... certainly his first visit. It could have been one of his first flights.
Yeah.
You know, so it's easy to get high on the right day, if you get the right day. But then, you know, it depends where you are, and then it's an unknown... obviously, sort of airspace, if you like. Things are different at that sort of height. You reach a different sort of different weather, if you like, at that sort of height. So, who knows? But the south face of Rakaposhi is an amazing sort of mountain. It's one of the tallest mountain faces on Earth in height. You know, it's in about 11 kilometers from the river, the Hunza River, to the summit. It rises something like 6,000 meters,
wow.
Which is, you know, it's far higher than the North Face of Everest, say.
Yeah.
You know. So it's in a very impressive place.
Mm. Now, you won an award for this, for the Karakoram film this year, and you won also 10 years ago for Nowhere at the Kubik Car. Now, I heard a rumor that something happened to that trophy. The first one. What happened to that?
Yeah, John, yeah, he's useless with trophies. He's got this, I don't know what it is, but he's decided he doesn't like trophies.
Right.
I won't say what's happened to it, but it didn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist.
I wouldn't want to upset the people of Saint-Hilaire, but it was a wonderful carved wooden eagle, apparently.
Yeah.
And I was livid when John told me. And this was after I'd given him the trophy from Graz that we won for the same program. It was a big glass sort of mountain with a brass plaque on it. And I said, well, where's that plaque I gave you? And where's the trophy from Graz? And he said, oh, I think it's under the caravan somewhere.
Yeah.
I said, what? He said, yeah, I just threw it out at him, you know. Oh, God. Anyway, I insisted he dug it out, and he dug it out, and I've got it here in the house now, and it's broken. The top of the plastic mountain is broken. And he's written in with a biro on a piece of paper and blue tacked it on. Grand Prix Graz in 1989 or 1990 or whatever it was. So this time I made sure that I got the trophy from Saint-Hilaire. And it's a wonderful, it's a nice one, it's a big brass thing. But John is not going to get his hands on it because slow it out if he does.
Yeah. And now you've done the festivals with the film, and you've just released the DVD.
Yeah.
And what next? Will it get shown on TV? Will it get to National Geographic?
That's what we'd like, obviously. Like I said, it's, you know, we didn't have a budget, so, you know, I've spent a long time, and Ray Saunders, the editor, we've sat for a long time, all through the summer, really, from the spring, in drips and drabs, just doing this program, getting it together. So, you know, we have to recoup some money with the DVD.
Yeah.
But if, for me, the real test is whether it gets broadcasted. And if it did, I'd be very, very happy.
Yeah.
And we should get some, you know, some decent money if that happens. So we're trying to sell this one, and we're trying to get a commission to go on the next one as well at the moment.
Excellent. So that's the plan for next year, back to Rakaposhi, up to 8,000 metres.
Yeah. But, you know, with John, it's very important with John to sort of, you know, I've been going on about going to Rakaposhi for a while, actually, before last year.
Mm.
And he was saying, oh, no, I'm into other things.
Mm.
And he was trying to get me to be interested in what he wanted to do. And then when we did come together last year, you know, that worked really well.
Mm.
But at the same time, I've got to be careful with John that I go with him to do what he really wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't really want to do it himself, he won't have his heart in it.
Yeah.
But if he really wants to do something, he will make it work.
Mm.
So I've got to sort of play him fairly carefully, if you like, in that sort of sense. I can't impose my film ideas on him too much, because he doesn't work like that. He just flies because he likes it. So he's got to like the project, or he won't be interested.